Jai Ma. First of all, a very warm and wonderful year ahead for all of us. And personally, I do believe that there is nothing like a good and bad time. All times are impelled. Time is impelled by the divine grace, divine love. You know, time itself is an agency and a power. If we go from the Indian thought, Indian point of view, time is an agency which moves all events. Of course, pure physics would have its own philosophical musings, and even from a pure metaphysical point of view, there would be a state where time would not exist. It's understandable. If you see all the events together, if you rise high up in the consciousness or become vast enough. But from practical point of view, from the ground where we stand, time does appear like a flow which changes its course, moves things, moves events, and brings in new combinations and releases certain old formations. So depending on our stance and our value, we use the word good or bad time. But is there really a good or bad time? Not really. It's the way we evaluate things, because there are comfort zones, things which we like, we prefer, things should be in a certain way. And the flow of time sometimes washes them away. And it is painful, and we feel, we suffer, and we say we are going through a bad time. Equally, there are things which are desirable, or when they come, we think that they are very nice, and we say good time. But actually, if we really look closely, time is neither good nor bad. It is taking us towards a predetermined future. Now I am coming straight to what Sri Aurobindo and the mother would say, that there is behind creation, a predetermining force which is operating. Like in a seed, there is already the future of the tree. So too, behind creation, there is something which is pushing it towards a high prefigured event. And that we know is the supermind, which has been step by step, stage by stage, carrying creation towards a very high predetermined goal. And we are caught at the crossroads where we are very happy and comfortable in our humanness, but we are being taken to something which is beyond our humanity. So that is the crossroad at which we stand. And so on one side, of course, New Year is a day when people like to take either resolutions, and one wishes that, resolutions were just wishful thinking, that today I decide and I could execute it tomorrow or this very moment. One also wishes that things that one wants to leave behind vanish simply because we, jerk them off. But they remain. The past continues to linger as a ghost shadow. And if we go by the law of karma, not only in this life, it haunts us through lives. It is there as tendencies, habits, memories. So there is always, at any given moment, not only on the New Year day, there is a drag from the past and there is a pull from the future. And all of us experience it. Sometimes this drag from the past and the pull becomes so acute that in the life of an individual, in the life of community, in the life of nations, it can take the form of a battle and a struggle. Generally, it's a slow process, so there is not much of a problem. We don't realize that how we have changed, but it's a very slow process. But there are times when this slow process changes into what Sri Aurobindo calls it as the hour of God. And if you really look at humanity, since the time the mother in one of her New Year messages said it is the hour of God, this was about 55 years back. Since then we see that there is the whole world and humanity has entered into an evolution fast forward. So how does it impact us? It impacts us. It impacts each one of us. Because it's a moment when on one side there will be a tendency, a serious drag from the past, a tendency to go back to the past. And what does past mean? Sri Aurobindo at one place says, We must learn to distinguish between the eternal and the old. So eternal is not old. It is sanatana. It was and it will be. So there are things which are eternal. They will always be there. But when we say old, it refers to the old forms, old ways of life, old modes of thought, old constructions. They are our comfort zones, which we had built on the flowing eddies of time. And now we are entering into a phase, we have already entered into a phase since last 50 years or so, now more and more, that all these comfort zones, old forms, they are being taken away. And this is very intimidating because there is a tendency to cling, to stick on. And one reason is that we don't have trust. We have fear of the future. So in one of the beautiful articles in volume 13, it's called Conservatism and Progress. So he says that every time there are these two tendencies which pull us and push us, and they pull in opposite directions. And human thought is frightened of the future. But he says future is like a sphinx with two minds. So on one side, it gives us the gift, the reward. We know the story of the sphinx. So it gives the reward of conquest to Oedipus, who is going to cross the desert to conquer a kingdom. But before he conquers the kingdom and crosses over, he has to face the challenge of the Sphinx. So he says that future brings these two things simultaneously. On one side, with one hand, it brings the offer of death. On the other hand, on the other side, it brings the offer of the future gift. And that's the story of the Sphinx. We all know that if you answer the question rightly, you cross. Otherwise, you die. So, whenever the Sphinx faces us, the future faces us, we have these two things. We have to die unto the past and be reborn into the future. There is a very beautiful line in the Synthesis of Yoga. To be reborn perpetually is the condition of immortality. So, reborn is you die to the past and you are reborn to the future. So what does it really mean when Sri Aurobindo was sharing these thoughts way early, 1905, 1906? There were people who were writing to him that, people were very, got angry. There is a whole note of Sri Aurobindo where he writes the old and the new. He's one of the Bangla writings where he says people are thinking that I am against everything that is old and I want to destroy the past. He says we have to distinguish between that which is eternal and that which is the old. And this is one of the big challenges of understanding Sri Aurobindo. Because when Sri Aurobindo dispenses with the formulas of the past, he is not dispensing with the eternal truths, the Shashwat truth, the Sanatan truths of the eternal religion. He is simply saying these past forms have become effete. And he even goes on to say if we don't bring out new forms which are more suited to the past, which is going to grow wider. So wideness and plasticity, that's why the mother and Sri Aurobindo so much emphasize upon. So that spirit of time will break us because you can't carry on with the old form into the future. And that future is going to be. So what we can do is we can either align with it or we can complain about it and ultimately be broken and lie on the sands of time. That's how he describes in one of his poems, A Vision of Science, where the Sphinx says, thou thinkest time and end for thee are not, and though thy pride is great, thou hast forgot the Sphinx that waits for thee beside the way. All questions thou mayest answer but one day, that reply for they who cannot die. She slays them, and their mangled bodies lie upon the highways of eternity. And one doesn't have to go very far or deep. Just look back, 100 years back, there were empires which are shrinking now, literally. What a power of time we can see. Look down like 300 years back, 500 years back. The more you go back in time, you just wonder that, where are these people? The gods have vanished. the Egyptian god, the Roman god, the Nordic gods, the Greek gods, powerful in their own time, where have they vanished? Those, opulent kingdoms, where is it vanished? That perfect organization. So we must understand that the flow of time, there is something which is behind it. And as in individual will, in individual life, we have to align our will to the divine will, because that is the real true freedom. Similarly, nations and civilizations and the world has to align itself to the divine will which is operating within it. And if it doesn't, then time, the spirit of time will break through all of it, and it would mean a lot of unnecessary destruction. So there was a question that was asked to Sri Aurobindo. I've just taken down some of these interesting messages. So a correspondent had asked a question to Sri Aurobindo in 1919. Sri Aurobindo wrote that time, spoke to the correspondent, that chaos and the calamities that were happening were the pangs of the birth of a new creation. This is exactly what Mother says in Japan, where she says that we can feel a restlessness which is taking place in nature. It's because nature is trying to give a new birth. How long is this going to continue in the ashram in India and eventually in the world? This ashram, India and world is the question put by the disciple. So Mother says it will continue until the world is ready and willing to receive the new creation. The consciousness of this new creation is already at work since the beginning of this year. This question is somewhere in 1970, because 69, in 69, because 69, 1st January, there was the descent of the Superman. So the Mother says that this consciousness is beginning to act more and more powerfully. If instead of resisting, people were collaborating, it would be quicker. But stupidity and ignorance are very obstinate. And the interesting part that we need to remember, it doesn't depend on human beings. The future has been decided. What we can do is we can go through it smoothly, or we can make it more and more difficult for us and for the world. And what we have to remember, this we see world over, a return to the past, because the future is moving at an intimidating speed. There is fear, and fear gives birth to falsehood. So there is as if we can go back to the past formulas of religion, of ideologies, of ways of life. That also won't work, because the forms are gone. What is going to work is the spirit of the future, which we must learn to embody more and more. So, there is a second question the disciple asked. Mother, the world is preparing for a big change. Will you help? This is Mother's message of 70. What is this great change of which you speak, and how are we to be of help to it? And she says, this great change is the appearance upon earth of a new race, which will be for man what man is for the animal. The consciousness of this new race is already at work upon earth to enlighten all who are able to receive it and heed it. Very interestingly, when Mother was asked, Mother, how are we to really participate? People asked, what is this new consciousness? How are we going to explain? She smiles and says, you cannot. He says, they want to understand. So he says, you see, what is the problem is people try to understand the new on the basis of the old. And then she takes a dig that they want to go back to, for example, people feel that this world negates the spiritual life. So they want to withdraw from life. They want to go into mountains. They want to go into isolation. They want to meditate. In fact, she has used this word that even in Auroville, they suddenly said that when are we going to start a meditation? Same thing she calls about in the ashram also. That after a long time, when Mother started the meditations, some of them said, we are back to spiritual life again. And Mother says, this is the same old illusion. So the person says, how is the new creation going to be? She says, the secret is to be found in the secret of the Vedas. Hasn't Sri Aurobindo told you? So what is that secret? It is the will and idea, the faith and will to be, that is the tapas. And she says, these are the two things which are required. The will that we really want that. And that implies that we are no longer satisfied with the world as it is. Everything may be beautiful outwardly. Still we want something else, something new, something different, something divine, something more beautiful, something more harmonious. And those who are nurturing this aspiration are the ones who are marked out. And they will be carried regardless of process or no process. In fact, she says there is no process. Even if you read supramental education, she says for the supramental education, it's from above downwards. It is very cryptic close. She says ways and means about psychic education, little bit about spiritual education, but for supramental education, she says it's from above downwards. And she says, in my own experience, it came like that. There is no method or process. But the will to be, and the will has to be so obstinate, so patient, so persistent. Even if all the appearances are, you know, contrary to what the will is, still the will should say that, well, this is what I want, nothing short of it. No shortcuts, no easy methods, no, you know, fast food spirituality. Whatever time it takes, Mother says one should have the patience and perseverance that even if it takes 1,000 years, this is what I want to do. In fact, she says that those who harbor such an aspiration, they are the ones who are ready for the new creation. So one thing she says is will. And the second is faith. That, well, this is going to be. Now, if these two things are there by whatever means, and we can talk about the means, then whether one is doing this or that, it becomes more and more irrelevant. Because that will and faith is what the divine wants. At one place, in one of her writings, she says, Conversations, that all that I need from you is a yes, a sincere yes. Can you imagine how easy she has made the yoga? Actually, Mother and Shurvindu didn't come to make things difficult for us. We have made it very difficult. Because we talk about the supermind as if it is beyond the range of everybody. We have made it so difficult with our philosophies, with our charts, with our diagrams and maps, with the bullet points. But it is so easy. They came to make it very easy. But the difficulty is, again and again, do we want it? So that's what the mother is asked. That you have asked us to help you. How can I help you? What am I to do? She says to concentrate and open, to receive the new progressive consciousness, to receive the new things which are coming down. Obviously, if we stick on to the past forms, they will not come. You can't, you know, the Sphinx offer is the wager and the death. You can't have both. The change does not need our help to come, but we need to open ourselves to the consciousness so that its coming is not in vain for us. So the disciple asks, to allow the free working of the new consciousness that descended last year, what should a sadhak do? See, implied in the question is, how many hours you want us to meditate? Which mantra you want us to use? What special techniques and process I must use? What should I do to collaborate? Mother's answer is, number one, be receptive. You see. Who is receptive? Who is open to this? And simultaneously, and be plastic. Not to be carried away by appearances. Not to hold on to this or that form. That I'll accept the new world only if children, you know, listen to the parents. Then this is the new world. Or if the children do according to my idea of what is good for them. We don't know. Let's admit that we really don't know. So she says, the first indispensable condition to prepare ourselves to receive the new consciousness is a true and spontaneous humility, which makes us feel deeply that we know nothing and are nothing in the face of the marvelous things we have to acquire. Basically, it means, is it not enough that Mother and Shobindu have said that? And they have not just said a random philosophical, thought-driven something. They have had the concrete experience of this. If we see through the records of yoga, Mother's life, they have thoroughly, meticulously mapped out everything, done it for us. That's why on the Samadhi we see inscribed, Thou who hast prepared all, achieved all, struggled all, everything He has prepared. The least we need is just to have faith that, well, because Sri Aurobindo says so. Sometimes I feel things can be so simple. Sometimes people ask, you know, very big intellectual questions. So at least I ask them, you want the short answer or you want the long answer? So they say both. So first I give the long logical answer. So when logic is satisfied, then I said, you know the short answer. So the short answer is because Sri Aurobindo says so. That's enough. Don't we, you know, when there is a great master. But this is where she speaks about human stupidity and imbecility. We are still arguing which religion is better, for example. Whereas consciousness is shooting beyond religions. It's going beyond all those formulas of the past into something very beautiful, divine, pure. Because all this is mixed up. You see, I often give, say this example, the difference between religion and spirituality. Leave aside the other, because that's not what we are talking about. But if you go to a typical, either you go to temple, to a mosque, to church, or what is it, Gurdwara, anywhere, you will see that there is a priest standing between you and the divine. He won't let you go. He mediates, he goes in and brings in. Right now the priest is the mental consciousness. It won't let us pass through. You come to the ashram. People walk to the samadhi not realizing where they have gone. Not realizing what they are touching. Some of them just go around. After that they ask, ye kya hai? I feel like asking that human being, ye kya hai? Itna unconsciousness. But that's okay. It doesn't matter. The point is that, see, this priest here is the psychic being. That's what they are trying to tell us. The psychic being is the leader. He doesn't put any barriers between us and the divine. But always there will be an intercession. Somebody, some prayer, some law, some way of life. You have to follow prescriptions. There's a whole conversation with the mother that Satprem has. He says, you know, that person has come from France and he's asking what to do, what not to do. And I'm telling him that no such thing is required. And mother says, yes, yes, you are quite right. He says, but still he wants something to meditate. He says, oh, they want to go back again to that. Then he says, but what should I tell him? Then she says, you tell him, you can convince him better. So she's saying none of these things. It's something very different. It's a direct contact with the divine. How are we to? We can't believe. Because we believe it's so long and so complicated. So much tapasya is required. So much something is required. And we conveniently quote places. Yes, what is the tapasya required? To hold on to the will and the faith. If we can do this, is a tapasya enough. That becomes through everything that may happen. To be open to the mother. So she says, one thing seems obvious. Humanity has reached a certain state of general tension. Tension in effort, in action, even in daily life. With such an excessive hyperactivity. So widespread trepidation. That mankind as a whole seems to have come to a point where it must either break through the resistance and emerge into a new consciousness, or else, now comes the other part, fall back into an abyss of darkness and inertia. So will it be for the whole of mankind? Certainly not. So she qualifies it. This tension is so complete and so widespread that something obviously has to break. It cannot go on this way. We may take it as a sure sign of the infusion into matter of a new principle of force. It's like when something new comes, one doesn't understand. You see, you're having a comfortable, let's say in a house, and a new person enters whom you don't know. So what happens? whatever be the discussion, everybody stops. They don't know whether we can say it in front or not. Who is the person? They want to understand. It's not enough that he says, I am Mr. So-and-so. See, this new principle is described very beautifully in a story in the Kena Upanishad, that the gods are enjoying the victory. And then suddenly the divine comes as a new being, as an Agyat, Yaksha. And Yakshas are beings of the mid-worlds. They don't fall in good or bad. And all the gods cannot recognize him. And he comes to humble them that don't think this is your last victory. There is so much more which has to come. So always be humble before the unknown, the infinite, the divine, who is always there with new things up his sleeve. He's the master magician. So all this, she speaks about that because something new has come, which by its very pressure is producing this acute state. What a different way of looking at all that we witness. So we blame people, we blame this, that, but basically people don't know that there is something new pushing them in certain directions, but because the human mind holding on to its imbecility is reacting in another way. Outwardly, we could expect the old methods used by nature when she wants to bring about an upheaval. But there is a new characteristic which of course is only visible in a few. But these few, she says, are widespread. It is not localized at one point. These few are not just in the ashram. They are widespread. We find traces of it in all countries, all over the world. So what is this new thing which we find in people, which is important? The will to find a new, higher, progressive solution. An effort to rise towards a vaster, more comprehensive perfection. And one can see there are people all over the world. I have seen children grown up, this, it doesn't matter, it's not about religion or anything, who understand the limitations of human consciousness, of human beings. Even recently I was, there was a whole song dedicated to that, and one of the secretary generals of the United Nations had exclaimed, somebody had sent a short video on how democracy, dictatorship, all of them eventually collapse. And he says at the end of it, you know why? Because human nature is the same. You give this a system, man will corrupt it. So what is important is man must change. And who will change? Who feel the need within. And then she says, certain ideas of a more general nature, of a wider, perhaps more collective kind are being worked out and are acting in the world. And both things go together. A possibility of a greater and more total destruction. A reckless inventiveness. I don't know whether we should put AI in part of the reckless inventiveness or not. Reckless inventiveness, which increases the possibility of catastrophe. A catastrophe which would be on a far greater scale than it has ever been. Words of caution. Future is telling us. It's like the Sphinx telling us. The mother at the age of 15 was called a Sphinx by all her classmates. She had the capacity of solving the impossible riddles. So mankind is a riddle. And man's journey has been a riddle. What is the solution? Change and pass through. If you look at it, oh, it's so obvious, so simple. And yet man doesn't think of that. He tries everything but remaining human. So the birth, or rather the manifestation of much higher and more comprehensive ideas and acts of will, which when they are heard will bring a wider, vaster, more complete, more perfect remedy than before. So this is the two kinds of forces. This struggle, this conflict between the constructive forces of the ascending evolution. Whatever is helping man to evolve, not making his task easier for him. Any sensible person knows that if you want your child to, if you want your child to really grow well, don't start doing everything for the child in the name that, oh, he is so cute, so sweet. Make him pick up his plate, keep in the kitchen. Make him, wear his shoes by himself. When you do that, then children grow. Let them take the challenge of life. But whatever is pushing us in comfort zones where challenges are going less and less in the name of giving comfort zone, then the challenges will spring up inside. Internal conflicts, inner unhappiness. So on one side, there is a more and more perfect and divine realization. And on the other hand, more destructive, powerfully destructive forces. Forces that are mad beyond all control is more and more obvious, visible, and it is a kind of race or struggle as to which will reach the goal first. It would seem that all the adverse anti-divine forces, the forces of the vital world, have descended on the earth. Now you see, she's writing this in 70s. You know? She is not saying this in before Second World War. She's saying all this later. And often, what are we to do then? Don't worry about that part. There are very few who can participate in the new creation and the constructive forces of the future. Whether it be in whatever field. And we should put our 100% there. So, this what... So, she says that there are more powerful spiritual force has also descended on earth to bring it a new life. This makes the struggle more acute, more violent, more visible, but it seems also more definitive. And then she says something very fascinating, because new year, there are a lot of predictions. You know, you'll see cephalologists, future fortune tellers, everybody, this Rashi, this will happen, this Rashi, that will happen. Mother has made the ultimate prediction. And she says something very fascinating. She says, this opens roads of realization into the future possibilities, which are already foreseen. When an entire part of humanity, the one which has opened consciously or unconsciously to the new forces, is lifted up. So even unconsciously, just that will to change, that faith that this cannot be, man cannot be the end of creative energy in the race. There is something more, something higher, something more beautiful. As it were, into a higher, more harmonious, more perfect life. Even if individual transformation is not always permissible or possible, there will be a kind of general uplifting. On the other hand, there will be other consequences which will tend to eliminate in an opposite way what the intervention of the mind in life has created, the perversions, the ugliness, the whole mass of distortions, which have increased suffering, misery, moral poverty, an entire area of sordid and repulsive misery, which makes a whole part of human life into something so frightful that must disappear. Because this is what makes humanity far worse, infinitely worse than animal life in its simplicity and the natural spontaneity and harmony that it has in spite of everything. We must rise above, spring up into light and harmony, or fall back down into the simplicity of a healthy, unperverted animal life. There are no midways. So there is a layer of humanity which will be lifted up into higher humanity. Still few will be picked up for the new race. And a large mass of humanity, which is, she says, is a perverted attempt. Those who cannot be lifted up, those who refuse to progress, will automatically lose the use of the mental consciousness and will fall back to a subhuman level. This too we see. Subhuman is the Rakshasa, the Asura, the Pishach, because mind is supposed to bring some reason. This is a process that is bound to take place. All this has been foreseen. So this is the future which she has, and she says that it will collapse because it has allowed perversion through its misuse of the mind. This type of humanity is part of an unfruitful attempt which must be eliminated. Just as there have been other abortive species which have disappeared in the course of universal history. It's very interesting that you know, there was a lot of on the show. I don't know how it was being shown other places, but a lot of people, New Year celebration, largely it's a party with all kinds of fireworks. But in India, something very strange happened. So it made news. Plenty of Gen Z people, they want to go to Varanasi in quietude. They want to go to Ujjain. They want to go to some of these places where they can reconnect with their spiritual essence. And they are not going there for any ritualistic puja. You see, some places they are going, like Banke Bihari, but there also. But they are going there, some of them is saying, because we feel it's a very beautiful spiritual way to start, to connect with that spiritual essence. They are doing boating on Ganga. It's not like, you know, these shots. And this has been something very new. This time they have observed like a mass phenomena. And I believe this must be happening all over the world, except that India does allow a lot of opportunities for taking a dip in the spiritual consciousness through so many doors. Because it's not just about going to a church or a temple, because that's a standard format. But here it's like without any standard format, simply a, you know, taking a boat and ferrying across Ganges is enough to give you a feel of the higher consciousness. And of course, there has to be something still higher. And she says, for yogic disciplines that are material, we have to be content with the old methods. The first point is, so these are the old methods. She says that they are okay for whatever. So she says, the greatest obstacle to participation in the new world is attachment to what has been and to what still is. One must know how to come out of old constructions in order to enter new ones. And then, because on New Year, everybody says goodbye 2025. Oh, it was a miserable year. Oh, 2026 will be a wonderful year. So we too say goodbye. So she says, say goodbye to what has been in order to make way for what must be. And then the final word is something very powerful. Not only free from all animality, but also beyond all humanity. There are things which are very human, we treasure. Human ties, human affections, human duties, human love. They are very fine, beautiful flowers of the old creation. This must ascend into divine love, divine ties. See, what is a divine tie? She says, Sri Aurobindo says in Savitri, all by spiritual links were joined to all. Human ties are based on family, region, province. She says provincial spirit has no place in sadhana. That's how human, language, customs, tradition, human ties. Nice, beautiful, nothing wrong with it. But spiritual ties, a community like our right now. Or those who are aspiring for something beyond. You meet these people who are not on any path. That doesn't matter. That's not important. So there are divine ties. Similarly, human love, still a thing of attachment, pity, you know, give and take. It has beautiful things, but still based on an interchange, which is a limited interchange. And as Savitri, again Sri Aurobindo says, Savitri tells to death, but first human love change its ways and transmute itself into love divine. So human love is beautiful, but human love must change into divine love. Divine love is powerful. It has none of those narrow egoistic movements of possessiveness. This is mine, this is the jealousies. All these are foreign to divine love. They cannot enter by its very nature. It's very strong, very powerful, very intense, very wide. So all these, in every sphere, this change is being affected. Not just human knowledge must change itself into a divine way of knowing things. See, even now, people don't understand intuition. So they say rational. But an intuitive knowledge is beginning to shine out. I have seen children, amazing, because they are not conditioned. And of course, in adults also it is happening. And the final word is, it is the old methods of yoga which demand silence and solitude. The yoga of tomorrow is to find the divine in work and in relation with the world. Look within yourself, reflect upon it, and tell me what your choice is. She says something very interesting. According to my experience, people fall into tamas when they go into solitude. So solitude is an inner solitude. It's an inner silence. Inner silence, in a crowd you can discover it. In Kurukshetra you can discover it. Watch the star, there is the inner silence. Behind noise one can discover it. That silence is a different thing. So this is the mother's, she has told us about the future. She tells us about what we have to do with the past. Past is not just things that were bad according to our understanding. Past is also that which we considered good. There is a whole passage of Sri Aurobindo on Kali Vrajanam. It's a concept which is there in ancient Indian thought, that when Kaliyuga comes, it washes away a lot of things. So Sri Aurobindo says it doesn't wash away only bad things, it washes away even good things. You see the Mahabharata war, when the age changes, it's not like only the bad guys were killed by Krishna. Very often people say, you know, it's the victory of good over evil. Even things which were good and high, which included not only Bhishma and Drona, were really, I mean, Drona was, he was a paid employee. Bhishma, I understand, but he was tied to his promise. Karna also, by his foolish promise. I mean, outwardly it looked like that. But many on the side of the Pandavas, whatever was living by the ego and the old consciousness at that moment, Krishna as Kali or Kali as Krishna, destroyed it completely. Nothing was left. So this is the passage where we stand. So we have to be ready to... This is the renunciation that is needed of us. Renunciation not just of our animal tendencies. In fact, animal can be tamed into becoming a servant of God. Vahana of God. But into all that we cherish as something very dear to us. Because they are very human. And even that has to be renounced. It's like the surgeon who prematurely would cut the, you know, caterpillar's covering and stifle the butterfly. So many such human things which people are discovering nowadays to make human life easier. I had this one interaction with which maybe I can stop. In my field, medicine, a lot of things are coming up about AI. All kinds of discussions are going on. Yes, AI can do many marvelous things without a doubt. So I said, yeah, very nice. But I hope you understand that healing is not just about medicine and diagnosis. There is a lot of human element that goes into it. Compassion, faith, assurance. I hope AI doesn't take that away. Because that healing is a matrix. It's not just about the medicine, the injection, the surgery and the patient. And if we do that, we'll go towards an increasing mechanization of the human consciousness. You may heal an illness, but leave behind not a man, but a machine. So we should be careful of all these things. Anyways, I think enough for today and for the future. Future is beautiful. Sri Aurobindo and the mother have given us a blanket assurance. And it does not depend upon any of us, so beautiful. But yes, something depends on us, whether individually we will collaborate and be part of the future, which is called as standing on the right side of history. Or under various masks of justification, we fall back and one day are pushed back aside as the past. That's a choice we all have to make. Jai Ma, any questions? Please. Welcome.
I think it was wonderful, Alokji, to understand that, as Mother Rishi Aurobindo was saying, that not only bad but good has to go for something new which is beyond our comprehension, I believe, at this time, or in my limited understanding. by so many things which we hear through you, of the words of Mother and Shivananda. I think that brings an occasion for all of us to dive more deep into those texts and the messages which has been pretty much given to us. And we are on this path, all of us, in whichever, however limited capacity we are. But that one thing which I've been reminded all the time, to go and read what Sri Aurobindo has written, what Mother has written, I think that will definitely open up something for all of us. If you have any question, you can ask. Otherwise, I just had one. I'm listening to this, and as you know, we have this Vande Mataram thing is going on. It is a little bit... I think it's okay. There's nothing. But we have come out with a new website now, VandeMataram.org. And there is an opportunity for everyone to become an ambassador of Vande Mataram, to bring this project to fruition, or however it turns out into the future. So I just encourage everyone to go visit the site, VandeMataram.org, and see if you want to become an ambassador for Vande Mataram, for this message to come out with its authenticity, with what Sri Aurobindo has put into the pages of Vande Mataram.
I
want to ask any questions.
Yes, please. Yes, please.
Maybe if anybody else is not asking, can ask a question.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I am seeing your naughty smile, and I am wondering what happened. Yes, yes.
It's actually a little bit naughty question, not too naughty.
Doesn't matter. Naughtier the better.
Much the better. K-N-O-T-T-I-E-R.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Fine. Even better.
You know, just listening to you talk about the future of humanity, one of the things that nowadays people are talking about, somewhat on the fringe, but it's becoming very prominent, is they're discovering that, you know, the distance between planets and solar systems, galaxies, are so vast, and they're increasing so fast, that they're saying that there's just no way that humans are going to be able to establish this multi-planetary civilization that they're talking about. You know? So is that like something of a limit that, you know, humanity as we are, we should not really, or not, we're not destined to go out. That's basically going to be another species.
Yes, so that's right. That, you know, these challenges, it's like, if you see life, even, you know, a human life. So, how do we, what are the challenges we have in the beginning? We have very physical and vital challenges just to survive, you know, that's enough to, you know, we have to be equipped physically and, you know, vitally, even to an extent emotionally, to face these challenges. As we go to a higher degree of, say, schooling, we have mental challenges, intellectual challenges. But see, the beauty is in real time and real life, after you have done all this, you have got a degree, you have got a job. What are the challenges you meet? You meet inner challenges. Life itself shows us that, you know, this is the process. So outer challenges of going to Mars, and Mother spoke about it. She laughed when she was told that, you know, they have gone to Moon and they have measured the distances. So what do you have to say? She said they are childish things. She laughed over it, because the real challenge is when you break the barriers of your consciousness. And it's much more difficult, very frankly, that, you know, interplanetary system, maybe, well, interplanetary system is a big thing, but even within interplanetary, within you know, this, our solar system, is a possible thing one can imagine. But far more difficult to, you know, enter into other dimensions, cosmic dimensions, and discover you know, new beings of other worlds. Far more difficult, and that's a bigger challenge. Not that that's what, where they want us to go, but man has to be done with these outer challenges before he can turn within. So it's a process. In that same poem which I was quoting, Vision of Science, Sri Aurobindo does see in the end that one day man will find that what he has been playing with is nothing. It's just dust. He is born to play with the stars. So, you know, by stars he means the powers that, you know, we were destiny. So man is born to play with that. But you see, the outer is how it begins. Recently, you must have, I won't name because, you know, it is a very sensitive political subject, but I'm sure you will catch it and everybody will catch it in the US itself, the famous EP files, okay, I'm not going to say further, which was a genome project, just imagine, to make human beings who were more, this thought is not new, by the way, Aldous Huxley talks about it, there are people who spoke about it, to make genetically modified human beings, let me put it in a simple way. So-called DNA of big people so that, you know, they can have a race and simultaneously probably to destroy much which is not worthwhile. This is the Asuric twist given to a divine impulsion. So that's how the Asura distorts. You'll be surprised, you know, how Asura gets the smell of the game much faster. So we know that Hitler used words like Superman, Arya, Swastika, all that Shurbindo will... The race, the Aryan race, all this that Shurbindo would use subsequently, but he gave it an Asuric twist. But do you know that who was Hitler's guru? She was a French woman and her name was Savitri. Is it just a coincidence? She had traveled to India. The Asura knows as if what is the divine plan. We learn much later and he already gives a corrupt twist. So many of these things will happen, man will play with. So the urge to reach out to the stars or interplanetary system is the urge to break into internal barriers of time and space. That's how you see in Savitri book 1 ends this way. He broke into another time and space. So probably LSDs etc. started like that, you know, in the 60s, the urge to break free from the bandwidth of experiences which we are having. But these are of course very dangerous and very primitive explorations. But in the new consciousness, it will be very natural. I am aware of now, even children, I myself had such beautiful experiences of simply communicating with, you know, disembodied beings, with plants, with animal species, and they listen. I didn't know, I don't have the art, but I can understand now that they all listen. And someone asked me today itself that, you know, how did you tell that ghost to go away? And, you know, I am also being haunted by a ghost. What do I do? I said, tell him that be quiet. Everything is fine. But there is a possibilities which we have never explored because we have just, brushed them aside. No, there is nothing like that. But I know children who speak to plants, who speak to, you know. So that's the real thing for man.
Any other question? I think Mirabhan, you have wanted to ask something.
Okay. Yeah.
I think somebody moshwings.
So I think with that, no. Is Mirabhan, are you ask? Do you want to ask a question? I see your hand raised.
Hello.
Yes. Please tell me.
I have a question.
Yes.
Do you think that in the new creation, people will be more compassionate towards these things that we call evil now? Because...
That's a very interesting question. Thank you for asking that. I understood. Yeah. I understood. They will be... Yes, please, go ahead.
Yeah, so the question is that we have seen that in history and even in modern times, I don't know so much about modern times, but in history sometimes scientists and mathematicians have had like a very personal and a soulful connection with their subject.
And yeah.
Very soulful and intuitive. So does that indicate a possible paradigm shift in science that has to happen, right?
Okay, so first question, I would say that they will have a wisely compassionate understanding. Because compassion is a term we must, you know, be careful in using. In a, again, human compassion, generally what we mean by human compassion is hardly compassion. It's more of a pity, a human emotion. But compassion looks from above, understands the real causes of suffering and misery. And therefore, it is able to, like Shurbindu and the mother worked with many asuric beings, hostile beings, because they understood their place and what was going on inside, and they would work towards changing them. So compassion was not just letting the asura free to act. It was to help him change if he is willing to change, to give him the full chance to change, undergo a change, and to be wise enough to understand the difference between who wants to change and who doesn't want to change. So that, of course, there will be a lot more compassion, not only towards, those who are evil, but also towards good beings, because we miss compassion even towards good human beings. See, that's the unfortunate part. So this is one part. But the second part, yes, definitely there would be a more intuitive connection. This is something which I am observing, that toward their, now it's not just a machinistic model where, you know, that whole paradigm is shifting. It's still very early, but a connection, for example, in physics, do objects have consciousness? Now, if you start with this thought, can there be a conscious manipulation? Manipulation is the wrong word, but manipulation in that sense, dealing with flowers, with plants, with the rivers, with the oceans, with the mountains. This is there in ancient knowledge, but we had certain fixed ways of dealing with it. I personally, do that, like, for example, with rain, with tornado. We don't have tornado, but I remember one cyclone. So I do try to communicate, and my own impression is that they listen. So there would be a lot more dealing with mechanical forces. Even animals, it's amazing. Today I can tell you one small little experience today. From the ashram, as I was coming, I saw a dog, and he was, a little bit... usually dogs around the ashram are very, very, very sweet and very, very calm. But they immediately recognize people who are having a different... they get a feel and they bark. So he was either unwell or whatever. He was sort of growling. So just to see that, does he recognize these vibrations? I passed very close to where his face was. And I was observing. He remained very quiet. It was like, otherwise he was looking very irritable. But it was like they recognized the vibration. So there is a way that we can, by both ways, communicate. This parallel science has always existed. And I could give many, many examples. I've spoken about it, and also water molecules being realigned. So I would suggest that, we have this idea of RO water, and we are doing it in ashram dining room, for example. We have the water. These RO water. So one day I was telling them that, nowadays RO water is not considered the best of waters. They said, no, we have done a trick. So what is the trick? So they play Om Namo Bhagavate music. Water flows through that music. So I said, oh, this is wonderful. Now you see, this is a very intuitive thing. So you are charging the water simply by those vibrations. So many such things are going to come up. Auroville also, there is a project like that. And right now it is still beginning, but people have to take the leap of faith and start a more and more subjective age has begun. So other ways of communications through consciousness with things. At my personal level, I do a lot of this, and I've seen wonderful, but I can't publish a paper. Okay. So lovely. And I think,
thank you so much.
Let's look toward the future with faith. Yeah.
Thank you.
Jai Ma. Let's look toward the future with faith and trust and full confidence in the divine grace who is carrying us through everything. Yes, anything? Okay. Jai Ma. Okay, we'll. Wonderful day, wonderful year, wonderful friends. Yeah. Jai Ma.